This is season 6, episode 2 of the Decoded Podcast. Total numbers, episode 210. I was looking at our show notes from last week and it said 209. So I'm like, oh, okay, today's 210. We hit 210. We made it.
Made it.
Yesterday, I took my son to like a hockey session. Mm-hmm. And it was during dinner hour. So I told my son, once you're on the ice and you're settled, I'm going to head out. I'm going to get my running shoes on. I'm going to walk down the street. I'm going to move and I'm going to get something to eat and I'll come back. And I happened to be right beside St. Benedict's Catholic Secondary School here in Waterloo region in Cambridge. And I took a picture and I tweeted it because my good buddy Jordan Figueredo is the VP at that school. So I took a pic, tweeted out, said something that I thought was funny about Jordan. And then after I did that, he responded. And then I was just like, what are you up to this weekend? So he's telling me. And then he asked me and I said, well, I'll be podcasting first thing in the morning. And then he asked what I think is the funniest question. And he said, what's the topic for this week? And I was like, that's a great question. I don't
know. Anybody says that in that particular moment. And here's the way we flow. And I don't know if Jordan's listening, but Jordan, whenever someone does something like that, I think in my world, I'll say, or I'll even kind of project maybe in Chiz's world too, pretty safe to say that you become the topic on the episode. Because that's kind of how it is. It's like, because we start off with like even the person, that one staff member that came to me and said, you know, what's up? There was no episode this week. And I'm like, hey, Anna, Anna gave me permission to name her. I checked it. I forgot to mention that. But Anna's like, where's the episode this week? And I was like, oh, damn. I'm like, we were kind of busy. We didn't get to it. And it was that expectant look. And then Anna became the topic on the episode the next week. Right. So Jordan, this is how we roll. You officially are, you are the topic. And I think, I don't know. Do you roll like that too? Like moments like that just all of a sudden kind of pop up in our convo.
I guess so, because this is how I'm kickstarting the podcast, talking about awesome. Jordan and Jordan. Him asking me what the topic would be today. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty. I think one of the things I like about our podcast is that we don't really know. Like, it's hilarious how we've tried over the years to say, okay, hey, this Saturday, we want to talk about this, this, and this. Then we get here. And based on the on-ramp or something we saw on social media or something that's happened in our family, all of a sudden, it's not the topic anymore. We can't get there.
Yeah, so, that's really what it is. I really do feel it's not that I don't want to. And I've actually got up from the pond. I'm like, oh, damn, we didn't talk about that thing. And I'm not dissatisfied with the conversation that I had, but it really does become, it becomes like what happens in the room. We need to kind of explore that. So you're absolutely right. There's a real, or I really dig the kind of the organic flow to it, because even, you know, any listeners are like, what the hell are they going to talk about this week? I'm thinking the same thing.
I like it. So Jordan got me thinking just for a couple of minutes about that, about the topic, but then I moved on because other things were happening, but it was great because I said to Jordan, I'm not at his school often. His new school. So it's kind of cool. I saw it and I'm like, hey, I'm going to snap a pic, send it to Jordan. Actually, I tweeted it. So I send it to everybody, but just,
that's truth.
The funny thing is, so it was like in the evening, right? And, you know, I said that I had to hold myself back from going to the school to visit him. And it was a play on, you know, him being an administrator and how busy they are and never leaving the building. So it was just a joke. He was at home when he read it. So that's good. I was happy he wasn't in the building because it's Friday night, man. Go home. Job's not gonna end. You're gonna come back to it every day this whole year. So pace yourself, right? And I think Jordan's pretty good at pacing himself from what I've known of him over the past few years. He's not the guy that spends his whole weekend at the school. And I like that. But he has a young family. And he has a partner that expects him to be around and help out. I'm inferring that. So good on him for not being at the school last night while I was walking past his school. But you and I did start a conversation this morning that I would like to talk about, because you got me thinking this morning. You got me, well, you didn't do anything. You presented an idea. I went through a range of emotions as I listened to your message to me. And I want to talk about it a little bit today, if you don't mind. And it's this whole, it's the idea of people in positions of power and authority who, from my perspective, not being in their position, should be speaking to issues of equity and social justice and inclusion. And they should be like leading the charge, but they're not. And then the part that really gets me is that when they leave those positions of power and authority, then all of a sudden they start speaking out about things that I would have thought they should have been speaking about when they were in the roles. Because now that they're out, they don't have as much influence within a system to help shape it, to help change it. Now, you presented some great ideas about why that happens and how that happens, but it's still upsetting to me. It's upsetting to me because you're in a position, a privileged position. You may not feel confident in your position. You may not feel as though you have any power, but to all the minions around you who are looking up at you, you have the podium. You have the space. It's perceived that you have these things. So why aren't you speaking out about stuff like this? About how we can change things for better, how we can positively influence people who are marginalized or people who come from equity deserving communities. Why did you wait until you left your position of power to start speaking about what should be done and what could be done and how we can move in a better way? And then I'm going to add just a layer. And I told you this morning, but it, for me, after listening to you and thinking these things, my respect for Malcolm X and what I've read about Malcolm X and what I've seen in video went up like 50%, because here you have a man who was in a privileged position of power and authority over people. And he talked about, this goes, actually, it's not just Malcolm X. He's just on my mind because we just finished with the book club with Malcolm X. But these people who are in these positions, these activists who speak out, who people see as troublemakers and who people see as difficult to deal with, they're actually using their power and authority to speak out about the problems that they see and possible ways to change things up in order to help the marginalized, in order to help the people who come from equity deserving communities. So you got me really thinking now about what stops people in those positions from making moves that people in those positions are perceived to be able to make. And it's a big one. It's a big one.
Yeah, it's. I think part of what I was observing there is that I've seen within my board individuals sort of move out of the public. It's sort of like they move out of public service, like directly. They're no longer employed by the board, and then they pop up in equity circles, commenting on current events that were hot topics when they were in power. So it got me thinking about this and just really having no, I can only observe it. And I shared that story with you just about when I had a headship. So a really kind of vague and distant, completely adjacent experience, but just this idea that, you know, me being in a headship, but it was an unqualified headship. The conditions of it were just like no one was stepping forward. So being asked directly, whether or not I would be interested in, you know, putting my name in the hat and then sort of doing it to keep the ship straight, really not having a deep understanding of what it meant to do the job, but I knew I had to keep the ship straight for a year. And then going to these regional meetings and being in the room with these individuals, but feeling bubbled, as in I was sort of in the room, but I really didn't have any status or power there. And I didn't have any sort of influence, like, because I was a person sitting. It was like, I think I mentioned, like, at the kids' table. So I was just sitting and listening, right? I did what I think I should do, is I sit and I listen, I take my notes, I wait to be kind of be directed, because I don't have the grounding in it. But that got me thinking about that dynamics of power. And for someone that is marginalized, in that similar position, it would be, I think, a very different, I think, I don't know what the difference is, because that's not my lived experience, but I'm trying to imagine when you're invited there as an equal. Like, I came in thinking, like, I can't do this job. Like, I'm just okay. Just happy. I'm taking my notes. I'm like, okay, I'm going to share these with people when I get back. I had no sense of scope or scale of the power that was at the table there. So me going back, I'm just like, okay, yeah, here's what was talked about. Go for it, team. Cause I couldn't even direct them what to do with it. I'm just like, I'm a CC line on this experience. Right. But then that got me thinking about just the impact of that in marginalized spaces, where you actually are there because you've been brought in as a leader, right? I was there as a check mark on the system. They needed to have the head there for my school. Okay, I can attend the meeting. And that started thinking about this parallel kind of space of being in the room where the power and status is and the influence happening and the collaboration, all the kind of stuff that happens, but not having access to the same experience as others there. So that was that kind of starting point for me. And yeah, there's been individuals in my board that I've observed that have popped back up on social media declaring a position, and people have openly punched down, pushed around, commented, and some of the comments were, so now you're saying something. I'm putting tone on it, but that's the essence of it. And when I see that, and when I saw that, I go back to that experience for myself of being in the room, but not of the power. And I was given the title, but even still, I didn't feel like this is an impost necessary. I won't call it. I think in my case, it's oversimplification to call it imposter syndrome. It really is me recognizing as I'm sitting there that I'm not in the zone of these other people. Now, by me, it was my qualification. That's what actually put me outside the zone. The emotion kind of felt the same. And there was no way for me to get to that space. I could only sit and observe. Like, me sitting there, I didn't become a contributor. Like, I wasn't a valuable contributor to any of the conversations. Because the stuff, I was in my second year of teaching. So I'm listening to stuff. I'm like, 2 years ago, I was running a restaurant. Now I'm a department head, like, it for, you know, a year. So then I think about individuals that, let's say, they are qualified. But what is the dynamic in that room? And some of the individuals that have stepped up as, like, post-public servant, now private individual, and kind of rocking their belief system, I right away think about what were the conditions that they exist, what was their context, what was their power, what did their power look like, what did their status look like, and how powerful, how persuasive, limiting, marginalizing was the actual system that they were looking to wield that power in. So on one hand, I do say, yeah, cool. It would have been cool if they had spoken up sooner. But I think also there's definitely going to be stuff there in their story that was happening around them when they maybe were having these thoughts before, that there was no safety. Like, there just wasn't safety for them to be that person. So they no longer are. It's, in some ways, it's the podcast that you and I have talked about. When we're no longer teachers, we can finally just open up and start swearing, saying whatever we want to. It's going to be it could be the same quality of commentary. It's just that we're going to be kind of off without the seatbelt on, and we can kind of speak more freely. I think our minds come out pretty good in this cast, but we have an on-ramp, like, and often the on-ramp and the off-ramp is the stuff like, yeah, we can't say that out loud. I still gotta work. I gotta protect some of that, right?
For sure. There is a perimeter around us, especially in the position we're in. Mm-hmm. But I also think that the higher we climb, I think there's responsibility to speak up. And I think that's part of the problem in the big picture is that we've been trained a certain way to not speak out, or we don't because of fear based on the policies and procedures put in place to keep us quiet. So it's the whole colonial way of operating, this hierarchy of power. Mm-hmm. I think you and I have done a pretty good job as teachers of pushing back a little bit, or entering into spaces and talking about things and pushing.
I've had my moments. I've also had the moments where I was like, I did not flex in a proportionate way to how I should. Like, it's, I was protecting myself. I should have been protecting something else.
It's tough. It's a tough.
Or working for myself. Yeah. Maybe to say I was working for myself. I should have been using my privilege more to work for somebody else. Like I went low hanging fruit on that one.
For me, it's always been about reading the room. So knowing who has the power to make things happen more than me, and then test driving it and seeing what happens when you connect with them about it. So I've been in positions where I've talked to people in positions of authority that I could see as helping me, and they wouldn't for whatever reason. I'd like to say, and as I talk to you and think about it right now, at the end of the day, my students always got what they needed, whether it was covert or overt, they got what they needed. I'm saying that because the covert is the people above me were like, yeah, we're not doing this because of whatever. I'm like, thanks for letting me know. Now I know where we stand. So I'm not coming back to you with any of this. I've tried to not be that person that constantly goes back and is slamming their head against a brick wall when they know nothing's going to come of it, but they feel like they need to speak every time. That's not me. I speak once or twice. I get a vibe for whether you're going to help or not. And then I base my next movements and decisions on that, those experiences. Now I'm in a bit of a vulnerable position now, because my whole job is to ask questions and try to be creative in a box where people don't necessarily want to be creative. And I say that because I've noticed that what they use against creativity are the rules of the system. Well, we have to follow the rules. And I'm like, yeah, we have to follow the rules, but you're not following the rules because you've got a situation here and you're not using the ultimate tools that can be used to try to bring these kids back. Nobody's calling the police. Nobody's calling FNCS. There are rules. But what you notice quickly is that some people just won't follow them, which then tells me that, oh, so we could break them if we wanted, but we're not going to because you don't want to. Okay, well, like I think I'm in my time. I think I'm in my space. I have a boss who's reasonably open to this whole strategy that I'm now part of. And so I depend on her to kind of guide me when I really don't have guidance. And hopefully I can provide her with some guidance based on my experience. But like, I'm in a position where I need to speak in a way that is, I can't think within the box because I'm dealing with kids who don't even fit inside the box or anywhere near it. So if I'm constantly looking at operating in the standard way, the standard way is what's led my students to where they're at today, which is I'm not going to school. I don't want school, and it doesn't want me.
I like that you said that at the other side. I think that's the big aha. We get caught up in the, oh man, that's a big one, dude. That's a big one. We get so swept up in the student success model of trying to fix the mindset of students that are saying, adapting, fixing, tweaking the mindset of a kid that's saying, I don't want school. We get way too hemmed up in that. The better thing to focus on is the second thing that you said, is the realization that school doesn't want them. Or a parallel to that one is school doesn't want the version of them that they're comfortable presenting or capable of presenting. And that is the thing right there, what you mentioned. That is the thing from my experience. I know I'm Ontario Ed, that is the thing, you know, listen to this now, but that's just time and time again, from my experiences in doing student success and alt ed and special education. The easy conversation is the simplified conversation is, why won't this kid come to school? Why won't this kid do school? Why won't this kid comply with school? The harder conversation, and the one that people just sometimes they patiently listen to me. Other times they roll their eyes. Sometimes I can see they're frightened. Sometimes I can see they're pissed off, that I would sort of suggest that one of the other things we need to kind of work through here is the fact that school actually doesn't want this kid. And there isn't always the time or the tools to sort of go through that. But sometimes I'll hold the line. I'll say, no, we have to sort of, I mean, we'll, and it's funny, we talk about the barriers, right? The barriers to education. The barriers to education, and even the language, the barriers of education, suggest that education is putting up the barriers, right? The barriers to education is in the kid notices. Like, I think that's kind of where the conversation starts. And then we pivot to the behavior that the kid has that's keeping them from accessing the resources, when instead pulling apart how those resources are formulated, budgeted for, distributed. I think that's a better, I think that's that type of pushback, I think is a valuable, very incredibly valuable conversation to engage in. I like that. Sorry, dude, I'm not sorry. You lit me up with that, because I think that is the thing. One of those source code moments that the discussion around, what has this school done to show? What has this school done? Let's keep it local. What has this school done to demonstrate that they don't want this kid in the building? And dude, I'll tell you, from my experience, even, you know, back in the day when I was doing the Sal stuff, and a student was referred to me into this kind of like alternative learning model, if a student was referred to me, and the lead on the paperwork was, we've cleared their schedule so that they can work with you, without having set a plan for what that work could look like, well, that is a clear indicator that the school doesn't want the kid. And we can play word games with that and say, well, it's kind of a necessary step, Clef. They have to be, you know, but I think the fact that it's happened before discussion kind of changes that a little bit. Yeah.
And now you've got me lit up with a couple of things that I don't even know. I don't even know if I can talk about them here, because mm-hmm. it may give away certain things that I'd,
yep.
No, I think gotcha. I should give away. But okay. At the very base of everything, right? If I were to tell a school, you don't want them here, they would be, the humans in the school become very upset, and they would take offense to that, because individually and at a human level, they do want the kid, right? But the way that the school is set up, the culture, the I keep referring to it as colonization, but like just the system, the way it's built, the way it is, if you look at that as a complete package, the school doesn't want the kid. But the individuals, if I were to say that to some of these principals, they would lose their mind. They would have some quality words for me, because they would not, to them, that's offensive. But let me give you, I'll try to give you an example without giving a lot of it away. But okay, so my last principal, PG, he wanted, he was inviting of all kids. Let me, and okay, so here we go. The school wanted the kids. And I'll tell you how I know that. And I'll tell you, I realize that now, but at the time I was upset. Because at the time I was like, I don't want a new student in my class. So I was part of the problem. And I was using the rules in place that the system provided to push back against getting a new student. So let me break it down a little bit, because this is exactly, I was part of the, I was part of the group. I was part of the umbrella of the school doesn't want the kid. Now, if you were to tell me, well, you're a horrible guy, I'd say, listen, I had this many kids. We were in the middle of a pandemic. I didn't know what I was doing. We kept flipping online, offline, online, offline. I was stressed. And then my principal comes and says, you're getting another kid. And I was not open to that at that time. But let me tell you how what we're talking about here reminds me of one of the reasons why I think PG is so awesome, is that he was not being part of the system that was saying, I don't want the kid. So what happened was, he was presented with a situation of a student who was at the virtual school, but the student was really struggling at the virtual school. And so they addressed it with PG, and he said, okay, well, let's bring the kid to day school then. If the virtual is not working and the parents are like, yeah, this, you know, come hell or high water, like we were scared of COVID, but now we're seeing our kids not learning. This isn't working anymore. So COVID or no COVID, we have to do something to help the kids. So the response was, well, let's bring them back into the building. But my system had set up timelines of when kids could shift in and out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no.
As did many schools.
Right, right.
Yeah, there were a lot of oppressive hurdles and one-way gates that the school system said, this is how it's going to be. Yeah.
So yeah. I responded with, no, this is not one of those gateways. It's not the time. And the response was, right, you're right, it's not the time, but I'm kind of making an executive decision based on the kid. And then here's another layer, right? Another layer for the teacher is, there's some behavioral issues. So it's not just a kid sitting at home, not wanting to go on the computer and learn. There's more to it. And I'm like, okay, this keeps getting better and better. So I'm getting a new student. I'm getting a new student because there's issues with learning. There's issues with behavior. So it's not just a clean invite the kid. There's like issues that need to be addressed. Okay. So you can imagine, and I'm not playing games here. I was tapped out, right? I'm not going to pretend like I was like, yeah, yeah, come on in. Let's have 50 kids in my room. No, I wasn't like that. I was tapped out. I was ready to throttle somebody. The kid comes, and this is where the shift happens. Okay. Once the kid arrived, the Roland that wasn't welcoming, that was over, because before this kid arrived, the kid didn't exist for me. It was just an idea, but now there's a human. So I'm like, okay, well, I met the kid before school and we hit it off right away. I made him feel as welcome as I could in terms of like setting up a space for him and giving him buddies and being very understanding his learning profile and the behavior issues. I was wide open to being supportive and being just open and aware to anything and everything. So I was watching him for all kinds of signals. I was hyper aware to ensure that the switch from virtual to face-to-face, when it wasn't supposed to be happening, was happening in a way that was, I had to get over my issue, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But, and I had to make sure that I was doing things to ensure the best I could for this student. So, you know, I notice after like a couple of days that he's really responding well to me and to the class. So I pull him aside during, quiet work time. And I said, listen, I said, how are you feeling? And he's like, I'm feeling really good. And I said, it's good to have you. You're here. You've got your desk. Everything's going well. I said, I'd like to talk to you about some of the things I was told about you coming in. He's like, yeah, sure. And remember, this is grade three. So the kid can speak for himself and stuff. I said, what was going on at home? Like, what happened? What was going on with school? What was going on with your behavior? Because I said, I know it's been a couple of days, but I said, you're polite. You're respectful. You know, when you feel like you can't do something, you come to me and we talk it out. I'm like, you're showing me a lot of really amazing things here that don't fit with what I was given in terms of like the way you operate. And he was very good about it. Like he explained, you know, at home, no friends, the work was hard. I couldn't get help. Nobody was helping me. My parents had to work, like just giving it to me. And, you know, I basically said to him, I appreciate your honesty. And I said, well, you're here now. You're in this community. Let's rock it. Like, let's make it the best shift ever kind of thing. And it was awesome. Like, when I think about this kid, the best thing for him was to come to school. And it was my principal who ignored all these things in place to not have people just coming and going. He said, I want the kid. And our conversation right now reminds me of some of the things I saw last year where the school doesn't want the kid. And I've been part of that. I've been part of that not wanting the kid. But this is wicked experience for me because, you know, and I told you some of the teachers I connected with last year never responded to any of my emails. They didn't want to talk to me. They wanted nothing to do with me because I was going to be the person who was going to add this kid to their roster and they didn't want the kid. The kid didn't exist for them. Great learning. Like, where am I going to get that learning? You know what I mean?
You light me up about the power of, you know, the what if. What happens in the room where, you know, we're having the student successful conversation and somebody openly recruits a kid? I want that kid in my program. I want that kid in my class. I want that kid on my team. Like, there's something that it's a funny shift, eh? But when you're in the room and someone says that, it's hard to follow up a statement like that. Like, it's hard to follow up the statement of even to ask questions why, because stuff like that isn't often said. It isn't. You know, I think that there's a bit of a deficit approach to it where sometimes the student success, part of the student success conversation is talking about where the kid can't be. And that's there's an easier movement from that to, like, you go where the kid can't be doesn't lead right to someone standing there saying, I got him, I got her, I have them, I'll take them. Like, it doesn't move right there right away. It moves more to more scarcity, you know, more deficit language about the kid's ability. Sometimes even deficit conversations around the teacher's ability to sort of work with, you know, any specific population of kids. You got me thinking about that power of it, of someone basically in one of those student successful conversations just to say, you know, I'll hand up, I'll take this kid. I want to work with this kid. I don't know. Have you come across many? It sounds like PG does that. Sounds like PG's like, I want this kid. Now that can be personal. There could be something about PG that just how they roll. It could be sort of looking at the sort of big, you know, capital E picture of education. Like, no, this is the place where we say that I want these kids here, right? Like, there's a lot of possibilities as to how that would be. But yeah, I'm getting some good feels off of that mindset. And I get the counterspin is that sometimes you can't say that. Like, sometimes you really can't say that. And I would say, you know, I've been in more than my share of conversations where we realize we've reached the edge of what we can actually do in a space to help a child. Now, sometimes I can say we've reached the edge and someone's holding back like they're holding back resources, funding, thinking, support. And you're like, I'm taking it. I want it. But then some other times it's that you actually have reached that, you've reached that edge, and any further work, let's say, with that could be possibly harmful. Like you need to get other supports in to help this kid. But I like this. I like this as a provocation more so. Like it's a bit of a bug bomb for me now, looking for the individuals that actively are saying, I want this kid in my space. I want this kid in this school. I want this kid to share in this experience with me. I like that. I haven't had enough of those conversations. I feel like I'm fighting. It's funny. I feel like I'm fighting the other type telling me what the kid can't do. And I can go strategic and figure it out. But I would say even I could just cut to the chase and say, yeah, that's all good. I'll take this kid. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to fight for what the kid needs. I just say, I'll take this kid and I'll figure it out when I get the kid.
One of the things that I've experienced in my career, especially moving from one school to another, which I've done often, is when you get to the new school, and you know, I don't mean this in a negative way, but this is seems to be the culture I've experienced. You move to a new school, you get your class, and you find out quickly that you have a loaded class. And what I mean by that is the class is created in a way that people didn't know who was going to get into that position. And so the classes were created so that people got kids that they wanted to work with. But then you have a class where it's like nobody wanted to work with them. And even saying that sounds so bad. Mm-hmm. It sounds bad. It sounds worse than it is, but it's like you walk in, and this has been, I guess, my story. And I've been on both sides of the fence.
It's also an open secret. That's the thing. This is an open secret, right? And that's where, like, if you're kind of shifting and pivoting on this is an open secret. This does happen in education where there's choice there with how sections are created. There can be. Mm-hmm. There can be. And I think that happens both at elementary and secondary.
And I've seen administrators do their best to make sure that doesn't happen that way.
Yep.
I'm going to drop PG's name again. PG, he was famous for saying to the staff, you're going to get together with your team and you're going to create next year's class lists. And you're going to do it in a way that if you were assigned that class, you'd be okay with it. So basically create classes where I could stick you in any of those classes and you're not going to come back and push back on me and say, why do I get that class? And, you know, when he said it like that, I took it to heart. And, you know, I've had, and I work with some amazing people, but even amongst these amazing people, there was pushback, and I've done it too. I've said, you know, hey, I want my balanced class as balanced as it can be, but there are certain students that I don't think I'm going to serve well. And then when you have these open conversations with your other colleagues, then, you know, I would say most of the time it ends with, okay, so let's compromise in terms of this room will have this makeup. This room will have this makeup. How do you feel about that? And I'll say they, in my opinion, they've been created in a fair way, but I would rather not have grade 3B class. Because there are a couple of people in there that I just think is just not the right thing off the bat. And most of the time people would say, you're right. I would rather not. Class 3C is balanced, but I would rather not be the teacher of that class. And it's not because of the imbalance. It's just because of certain individuals who are in the room that you've had experiences with that did not go well. And I'll tell you a little secret. I won't tell you what part of my career or where this happened in my career, but only once in my entire career, and I've been doing this for what, 22 years, did I say to a principal, please do not put that student in my class. And then it was an awesome conversation because the principal looked at me sideways and said, what? Why? And I'm like, sit down, put your seatbelt on, and let's do this. It was not, it was multi-layered. It was multi-layered, and it was, I've never asked you card. I said, I've never asked you for anything. I'm asking you now. And the response was, okay, I can tell by your, you made a great argument on how, and this is the cool thing. The principal said, I got to tell you, I'm thinking about the kid first. I'm not thinking about you. I said, two thumbs up. Let's think about the kid first. How is this going to play if I'm already starting like this? Let's just start there. Was I being selfish? Yes, I was. Was I also thinking about the kid? I was, because I was like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to serve this kid well? Now, if the kid does end up in my class, then I'm all in. I'm all in. But until that moment, I'm not all in. So I said to the principal, I laid it out. And the principal was like, okay, you made some great points. I agree. I don't think this would be, initially, as we're talking, I don't think this would be a good fit for the kid. I said, okay, thanks. There have been other times where I felt a vibe and I've gone into it and the vibe's gone away and everything's great. So there's openness in me for that too. I've looked at class lists and shaken my head like, oh, how am I going to do this? And then it's November and we're rocking it and we're getting along. And some of us are not getting along, but that's just the way the world works. And you got to find a way. Right. And that's the one thing I'll say about being a classroom teacher, having been a classroom teacher, there's beauty there. There's beauty mm-hmm. in conflict and then modeling how to get through it and giving kids two thumbs up for stepping out of their comfort zone and learning how to be humans and helping me how to be more of a human. So it goes both ways, but it's funny. You build class lists and you say, okay, they on paper, they're balanced, but I do not want to be the teacher of class 3B. Why? Well, because I don't like what's going on in there. I don't like it. But yes, there are the profiles of ESL learners and special education students, if you will, and all the layers, boys, girls, and now, you know, people who may not identify, like it's balanced, but I don't feel connected to that list. It's hilarious because a principal says what they say, but then the teachers are the ones who are executing and they should have some say as well. I really believe that they should have a say. And so we get our say, we meet and we get our say. And I would say 95% of the groups I've worked with have been fantastic with those creations. And then there's been the 5% where I have, you know, I say a few quality things to these people and they say a couple of quality things to me and we move on with our lives. But I've walked into schools, I'm new, and they look at my list and they're like, whoa. And I'm like, you made the effing list. Why are you woeing? Right? I've done that too. I've said, didn't you make the list? Well, yeah, I was part of the team. Why are you woeing?
Why are you woeing? That's why you're woeing.
But here's the secret. Don't tell anybody.
Okay, I won't.
Then I totally take ownership of that list and I say, I'm going to make this the best year.
Yeah.
I'm going to make this the year that when they leave, they're like, I miss Mr. C. I wish I had Mr. C again. Mm-hmm. So you make your woe list and I'll make sure we come out on the other end happy.
Yeah. I get the sense that, that idea of sort of calibrating class lists is a little bit more fluid, flexible. There's a flexibility there at elementary. I don't think it works the same way, though I've been in the same conversations and students have moved between sections, but because of the sort of, you got to pick your courses ahead of time kind of factor. And then moving between classes afterwards can become kind of tricky. And the actual layers of cohorts are far less integrated that the system makes a lot of those choices for us, as in here's kid A that has 8 courses and kid B that has 8 courses and kid C that has 8 courses. You put it into the machine, and it kind of spits out a configuration, a schedule that it isn't as simple. It can be as simple. I just haven't noticed the same simplicity as in sitting down with the rosters of kids at the front end of the year and saying, okay, how do we, you know, are we going to have a 5-6 split this year? Are we going to have just a straight 6? And then kind of saying, okay, who would be ideal to put together? I will say that I have had experiences where even in that moment of saying, I want to work with that kid, I have been in other, this happened in alt ed, where someone was being recommended into alt ed, and happened more times within the school. So a student would be recommended to come into alt ed. We had a cap of 16, you know, each kid brings a course with them because there was really no limit on the number of courses that we would be facilitating in there. We tried to organize it in a way so that we would have some harmony so the kids could move together where possible. But if the kid needed a course, the kid got, you know, they got the course they needed. We did have very open conversations around I called it the sort of like the chemistry factor. So I may have a student that, I may have a student already in programming that someone is saying in the school, we want to bring this other kid into alt ed. And I put to them, I said, of course we can do that. Like, I'll take that kid, but we need to talk about the impact of having both of them in the exact same classroom, knowing what we know about their networking and connections within the school. I said, because that won't change just because they're in with me, like the cool teacher. Like, it's not going to happen like that. It doesn't work like that, right? So let's talk about the other supports that I'm going to need in order to, so that I can navigate their relationship when they're both in the exact same class. Because there's other times where it's absolutely known that when the, you know, with these two individuals get in the hallway, they're having behaviors that are not, we're having behaviors that are just not supportive of the school environment. So it's an interesting counter side to the whole, yes, I take that kid, give me that kid. When you do that and you try and keep the door open as wide as possible, as high as possible, as you know, 24/7, 365 kind of like opportunity as possible, the next rational step then is that getting them there with me or getting them in on my crew will also mean I need other supports that will help these kids grow. And that'll be for next week, I guess.
So there you have it. I hope Jordan's happy with what we talked about. What did you draw for us today, Clough?
I didn't get the title on it yet.
Is that a cardinal on a branch?
It is.
Nice. Can you tell us the why you drew that today?
Only recently did I come to understand that cardinal is not just a bird. It can also mean like kind of elemental, like specific, like you talk about, like, and I think I knew this, but I've never ever used the word like that. I've never used the word like, that's a cardinal. And the way this is what I came up, someone said, that's a cardinal rule. And my brain right away came to like, about birds, like what I, and then I kind of, you know, you do context and I'm listening and they're like, no, it's a cardinal. And I think then I was like, okay, yeah, this is used in other spots. I taught geography last year and I never made the connection between directionality and cardinal, right? So that was just in my mind. This morning the walk was good. And one of the things that I really dig is I love hearing the cardinals and the blue jays. They're just such a different bird call in the morning. And it, I don't know, I think when I was a kid, it was just something that I noticed. So out for the walk this morning, hearing the birds, 51-year-old aha moment about the meaning of a word, cardinal. I managed to draw it. That's the other part too, because it might not have turned out. I don't think I've ever done painted or drawn a cardinal before. So I'm happy that it is one of those ones you look at, like you actually identified it. I consider that success criteria.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And you remind me that I know I'll tell you about words I don't like. You and I have talked about words you don't like.
Maybe yes. You used to send me a few of that. Like, I just don't like this word.
Maybe now we should talk. We should also balance that out with words that we do like.
You know? Can I mention a thing? And it's just if anyone happens to be listening, tomorrow from 2 to 3, I'm going to drop into a Twitter space conversation. Anyone that wants to jump in, the invite there, you know, drop it into your agenda, whatever it is. But actually on that point, talking about fossils. So, you know, those full of beep sayings, idioms, language that just, it'll be just a little bit of talk about edubabble because, you know, we're already back into PD sessions and staff meetings and the jargon is everywhere, right?
Yeah, I didn't know that 2 to 3 p.m. on Sundays is the time you've carved out for it.
I did the one last week and it was about first days at school and had some really cool conversation there. So now that we're all in the room, right? Close the door for a sec and we'll say, okay, let's get the word wall out. What are the fossil fuel? Let's talk about it.
Well, I hope to be there. So we'll see how that goes.
You are welcome to attend.
I appreciate that. Okay. This was season 6, episode 2 of the Decoder podcast. Total episode 210. Got to throw that in there.
Sweet. So
hopefully we'll be doing this again next week. Peace.
Peace, man. Take care.